Good morning. This is the International Connection, as it comes to you every single Saturday morning here on CKLN. Just a little sort of continuation here. This is part two of a special series of shows we're doing, a two-part series, actually. But we're taking a conference call from Carmel, California, and from Chicago, Illinois. We're talking with Sherman Skolnick in Chicago and Maeve Russell in Carmel. We're joined, as per usual, with Bob Marshall and Tom Rich. My name's Adam Vaughn. Last week we discussed Western Goals. It's an organization which is centered in California, and it is an American organization with some very top-level people comprising its board of directors. We talked a little bit about their directions and their, I guess, accomplishments, for lack of a better word, over the last 10, 15 years. We're going to develop that theme a little bit more today. Bob, perhaps you can introduce the components that we're going to be talking about.
Well, May took the Western Goal story to Larry Flint, and Larry Flint then created a magazine called The Rebel for May Russell. And
well, let's have a little background here. Larry Flint has been running a porno magazine called Hustler, and in between the so-so pictures, he has had occasionally some very profound political articles, I think some of them by May Russell and others, that were not porno, but were strictly very profound discussions of politics and espionage.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's a very accurate description of Hustler, I guess.
That's for those that have been looking too much at the pictures and not at May Brussels articles.
Let me just make one. Last week I had to make one clarification about the geography. Now I've got to clear up one more thing. And I want to make this very clear. Because the report of Larry McDonald's murder has to do with Western Goals, and May Brussels' silence has to do with my publishing two stories in his publications. But Western Goals is in Alexandria, Virginia. Larry McDonald was chairman, but it is a national organization. It's not a California organization.
Yeah, right.
Okay, well.
Ms. Dr. Hans Senholz is on the board of Western Goals.
I stand corrected. What I was trying to do.
Global.
Yeah.
Dr. Senholz was a pilot for Hitler's Luftwaffe.
The catalyst for this discussion occurred in California, and I guess that's why I centered it there.
But, May, let's go into.
The catalyst occurred in California, but the national, international chairman.
Global. But, May, let's go into an example here of what Larry Flint and you were trying to do and what happened.
Okay, what happened was I called in and said, I'd like to write about Larry McDonald. And I had been not on the air, as I say, up to the time the plane went down, talking about various parts of the Los Angeles Police Department and Western Goals and how they were linked to the murder of John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King. Had done broadcasts on G. Gordon Liddy, Gordon Novell, and Mitchell Werbel. And I called Larry Flint, and he said, okay, write it. Have it done within 3 weeks, and if you do it, I'll start a magazine for you called The Rebel. I always wanted to do it for years. It would be an investigative reporting magazine.
No porno.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's just on exposés. And when I met him in September of 83, he was to get out The Rebel. Well, The Rebel, when it went on the stand by November 22nd, the first issue, I had the cover story, November 22nd, 1983, for the anniversary of John Kennedy's death. On my broadcast, November 28th, I said, announced that The Rebel was through. It had been taken over by the military. It was on the stand 6 days, and they would have 6 issues, but Larry Flint was already drugged and crazy and put in federal prisons and federal mental hospitals, and was accompanied by Mitchell Werbel, who I was writing about. Now, when I wrote the article for him on the Korean Airlines, I spent 3 weeks on that and went right to the Kennedy story. And as I was writing, the people I was writing about moved into his house, physically moved into his house.
And I suppose that happened.
Huh? Because the people at Hustler and the telephone people, his line is tapped. As a matter of fact, his security guard, who was his wife's brother, Mr. Ritter, threatened Larry because every conversation in the house had been taped for years.
Well, wait a minute. Maybe some listeners don't know, but Larry Flint is physically very helpless.
Well, I meant he was shot from the waist down, so that's pretty helpless.
Right.
Okay. So anyway, his chief of security threatened, if he brought charges against him not too long ago, that every telephone conversation in the house had been taped. And his chief of security, his brother-in-law, Mr. Ritter, now works with Gordon Novell in New Orleans. And Novell was written up in documents and books, and Jim Garrison, the district attorney in New Orleans, wanted Novell for his role in an organization called Permanex in the murder of John Kennedy. So I was writing about the murder of John Kennedy, and Gordon Novell moves into the house. I was writing about silencers at Dealey Plaza behind the fence, and Mitchell Revelle, and Mitchell Revelle literally moved into Larry Flynt's house. I was writing about the E. Allen Hunt and the assassination team of G. Gordon Liddy. Liddy became part of the Hustler operation. The very people that I was talking to Larry Flynt about physically went to his plant that he almost lost and into his home. And I, the first time I met him, I was home a few times, his wife Althea was there, and she was going to make a movie on the murder of Jim Morrison, the rock musician, not the wife of Jim Morrison, who died in Paris. And I said, oh, I'll give you all this material. I wrote it once for Penthouse on the murder of rock musicians. It was too heavy. They hadn't taken it. And within 30 days, in Althea Flynt's home, came Alan Graham, who was the security guard for Morrison and his brother-in-law, Jim Morrison, in Paris. And he was his brother-in-law anywhere. So Althea had been drugged out of her head. They wanted to put her back in prison because her probation was broken from earlier drug charges. So Larry was drugged and taken all over the country. You saw him, Sherman.
Let me add this. They tricked him, even though he had a pilot and a chartered plane, they tricked him in getting on a regular scheduled airline into Chicago with his pilot sitting there, and he came into Chicago right into the hands of the FBI, who put him in jail, and on an emergency Sunday morning hearing in December of 83, in the middle of the night, he called somebody in California and said, I want this legal researcher who's in a wheelchair, this fellow Skolnick, I want him next to me in the jail court.
Yeah.
So they called me 3 o'clock in the morning, and there
I told them that you lived there and would help them.
Right. And I was sitting next to Larry Flynt in the, they had a little courtroom inside the federal jail in Chicago, and I was the advisor of his choice. I'm self-educated in law, but I don't wish to be a lawyer in this corrupt society. So I was sitting next to him, and I was astounded. First of all, he's quite helpless. He doesn't use braces or anything to get up and around as I do.
Yes.
And he was sitting there, bombed out. That's all I could put it. Incoherent. And I wasn't sure what I was supposed to do for this blob. I mean, he was incoherent.
He still is.
But the point is, I think May could point out, okay, that prior to the time of these happenings, that he was quite clever. Whatever anyone thinks about him running a porno magazine, he had a $250 million operation going, was doing $20 to $25 million business per month. And
he's a distributor. He fought with Annenberg for distribution of these magazines, and he's one of the biggest distributors.
But I know in your discussions prior to these happenings, May, you were quite convinced that the man was very lucid, what he was talking about, and was rather clever. Am I right?
Well, it wasn't clever. When he ran that story in the newspapers, that $400,000 ad on the Korean airline, it was totally brilliant.
But let's get to the point of what happened. He decided to set up, in other words, he got set up into these things by December of 83, and the show was over.
Okay,
he wanted to be in charge of this new all political magazine called Rebel. And what happened?
So, you're forgetting one thing that was very important. Maybe you didn't know it. Larry Flynt was going to run for president. And he knew he couldn't win, but he was going to put in $2 or $3 million because
to educate the public.
To educate the public. So at the time I met him, the Korean airline went down in September. And he had just announced that he wanted to be president, and he wanted me to help him on certain political issues that he would talk about. Well, that made Brussels help a candidate for president. I mean, we should have known it would be, you know, what would happen. But anyway, he got a phone call. He was in the East, and he got a phone call from station WBAI in New York asking him about running for president because his name was well-known as a publisher. It was not the LA Free Press, and it had been shot after his issue came out. And they asked I tell you what I'm going to do? He said, I'm publishing an article on the murder of Larry McDonald in a Korean airline. This is just from the heat of the propaganda on the Soviet back. And he said, I'm going to also investigate Henry Kissinger and Fritz Kramer. Now, I have tapes of that radio program. A friend in New York taped it. He was the only man that lived in America, outside of myself, I guess, who talked about Kramer. But he's so internationally and nationally known. He said, I want to get to the bottom of this with Kramer and Kissinger. And with that, the A-team moved in. And I call the A-team with Revell, Novell, Woody, and Larry. Timothy Leary, Gordon Novell, G. Gordon Leary, and Mitchell Revell. They were the absolute A-team from the National Security Council, not little roving FBI, which Woody was also FBI, and Treasury. The A-team took over the publication house, the body of Flint, and the magazine Rebel was closed down within 10 issues, but I knew 6 days after the first issue went out that they had drugged him. I said, who's at your house, Larry? He called me. I said, you've been drugged, Larry. You're sick. You know, get out of this. And he couldn't get out. They were drugging him.
Yeah, but
I remember
the first issue of the magazine. Let's point out, because it's a rarity now. I know you fellows up in Toronto probably have a copy, but
yes.
The point is that first issue had a lengthy, heavily footnoted, heavily documented article about May, the CIA and the Nazis and the assassination.
Incidentally, the copies of Rebel are available if people write and send a self-addressed stamped envelope. I have reprints of them. I send out maybe 30 a week. People are ordering it, so it's not dead and over. It's nothing that went off the stands. It's, you know, we have copy machines today, so nothing is over, okay?
But you better send a large envelope because it's a heavy article.
A legal-size envelope, okay. Or just a small one with information on how to get it, and I can give the address.
Okay, Nate. I have a question about, at the time when I was hearing the tapes, it got very interesting how Larry got talking about this blue manna drug they were giving him, which you felt was the drug that was causing his condition. Could you go into
that? They were giving him, and incidentally, I found out that the man who was supplying this stuff for him, I still have the bottles in the kitchen, was a Ku Klux Klan organizer in the South, from Atlanta.
May you feel this is a microcosm of what could happen to somebody that has the means to try to publish these profound political and espionage situation, and what happens to him.
Exactly.
In other words, he had the money to go ahead with this.
Incidentally,
if it cost $10 million, he would have done it, but then they demobilized him.
Yeah, but a dietitian moved in his house, and he wanted to be, you know, real healthy. So I was at the house, and he pulls up in his wheelchair, and he introduces me to the dietitian, and he recommends the substance I was supposed to take. And I said, Larry, I don't take anything like that. I don't put anything in my body. And he said, well, this is very healthy. She's a dietitian. And I said, then why did you give us lunch on white bread this noon if she's your dietitian?
Sure.
She's no Wonder Bread. I said, if she knows so much, then she's sitting there. I said, if she's your dietitian, tell her that whole wheat bread is better, okay?
Sure.
And he was trying to give me what's called green manna, spirulina, which some companies make. Like, you can take LSD, and it could be pure. You can take LSD and kill somebody, mostly yourself, with chemicals in it.
But, May, tell us what the plans were for Rebel. Originally, you were going to be in charge, and what were you going to hope? What were you hoping to do?
What I was going to do, incidentally, I was copying stories from Rebel last night, and I have the back issues if people want copies, you know, to say. But the 10 issues were magnificent. One of the largest articles, two-part, was on Paul Laxalt and the Mafia, and that lawsuit is going to begin soon in Nevada. He's suing the Sacramento Bee and the people for telling about Mafia connections. There were sections on colonial dictatorship, which is terribly important to the Nazi emergence and the fascism, linked directly to Michael Townley and Philip Bush.
Tell me this. Do you think that the magazine could have, even if they didn't drug and screw up Larry Flint, do you think the magazine could have succeeded when a lot of the magazines and books distributed in North America are done through the hands of the gangsters?
Yeah,
in other words, the criminal element in North America is in charge of the distribution of books and magazines, and Larry Flint in the 70s fought with them and started up an independent circulation and distribution of Hustler.
Let me tell you something. Let's get on to the point about Larry Flint, though. Larry Flint is no virgin. He works with the hardest criminal element in the United States, Klan, Nazi, and Mafia. He wants to divide the turf with them, that's all.
I never said he was an angel.
No, he was on the ship in the Navy when John Kennedy visited the ship. And he had a particular affiliation with him as a person.
Despite his bad background, he was going to do perhaps substantial good.
I think he felt very badly when Kennedy's head was blown off, and he realized that elements in this country were doing it.
But what were the plans for Rebel at the time when he told you that you were going to be in charge?
Well, when he told me that I would have editorial decisions, he put in charge of Rebel a man named Jim Good, who had taken a scissors and cut up my Korean Airlines story so it wasn't even recognizable and left out the Ronald Reagan Los Angeles connection.
And
William Frank Smith connection to Larry McDonald and the murder of McDonald. And Larry Flint was furious, and he made Jim Good put the entire thing together intact as it should.
I believe one of your plans were, if you were to remain in that position,
was
to give an opportunity to a lot of independent writers who were not published or not widely published.
We were going to give, people like yourself, what I call with John Judge, the real researchers, the people who are not afraid to open every tunnel, even if it stinks, and just see if there's a corpse there. You know, we're not...
We're not retired from OSS or CIA as certain other assassination researchers, such as Weisberg is.
Oh.
I know Weisberg's going to scream, but... I mean, in other words, we don't have those conflicting situations from our background.
Well, he doesn't live in Toronto, so he won't hear it.
Okay. I've been listening for the last couple of weeks, and I've got a question.
Such a publication can exist. It's not a question of would the people buy it or could we succeed. It can happen. It can happen on small radio stations such as the one we're broadcasting on now. I've been on the air 15 years, which is an absolute miracle.
But let me put in my two cents.
Yes.
It is not possible in Chicago. I am not allowed to go on the air in Chicago, although I'm widely known in this area.
Well, I'm not on Los Angeles anywhere. No, it's impossible. There's 3 million people there, and I can't be heard in Los Angeles.
We have one station that you go on, but in Chicago, for example, it is absolutely, this is not allowed to be discussed.
Because, you see, you've done a lot of no-nos. You went into the Dorothy Hunt plane crash. And you went into the judges and the corruption of your own system.
Well, the one thing that I got onto the crap list, I began an investigation in the 60s of the news media and the CIA, and friends warned me that that's going to get me taken off the air.
Back to Larry Flint, the silencing of publishers.
Actually, before we get to that, can I ask one question here? I've been listening for the last couple of weeks, and I've got a question I think sort of sets this whole thing up. You're putting forth the theory that there's an organization that can knock a plane down over Korea and kill Larry McDonald. You've got an organization that can kill Kennedy. You've got an organization that can kill Dorothy Hunt. You've got an organization that's killing a lot of people. Why couldn't it kill Larry Flint, and why hasn't it killed you? I mean,
Can I answer first?
Sure.
I think the most dangerous thing that could ever be for us is if by some miracle May and I were to get on a network show and talk to 40 million people in North America. We wouldn't make it out of the network door. I wouldn't. In fact, if by some miracle, okay, I was to be in that situation, do you know something very funny? From what we know about it, I'm talking for myself. I wouldn't go into that studio except in an armored car. In other words, the point is, we are safe as long as we're talking to small numbers of people and we're not talking on a TV network to 20 or 40 or 80 million people.
But you're trying to think that somebody like Sherman Stolnick in Germany in 1937 could say, Hitler's going to invade Poland and he wants to control the world and put 6 million people in ovens. How long would you live if you had the network in Germany?
But my point is why Larry Flint was obviously starting to say these things and things started to happen to him. Why did they just bump him off like they bumped everybody else off?
At one time, they gave him a drug that I don't know how it was. It persuaded him, that he would make a big splash if he was dropped out of an airplane into the Pacific Ocean.
Uh-huh.
And that was a way of getting rid of him. Since they couldn't just shoot him again, they screwed him up. So now, in a way, he's quite harmless. He's not in charge of anything anymore. So his money is not being used to further any ideas of mine or May's
But for our listeners, who is they? Who really is they? I understand Gordon Neville and Mitchell Wobell, and these guys are middle echelon guys. Who's above them?
The ruling class that has dealt with political assassination from the time of the Medicis up to now. It's been dealt with from the beginning of this country, fraud, in court, assassinations, but it hasn't been widely written about. Who would you call the they, May? Who do you say they are?
Well, I know who they are. I would say that the most important people are those who had funded Adolf Hitler to break the back of the communist government once they kicked out both the church and the monarchy.
These are super bankers of the world.
Not only the bankers, the commodities and everything else.
Oh, no, I think that every person has a somewhat different focus on who the they is.
Well, what I think is that's running this now are a group of people who, headed originally by Herbert Hoover in the 20s, and then he became head of the country, bankrupt us in the 30s, arming for World War II, who has worked with a team of people who are determined that we will not coexist with a communist Russia. The Soviet Union became the Antichrist.
I think we should be a little more technical here. Your late friend there that was a researcher, you know who I mean.
I know you mean Rush Hart.
Lydia.
Oh, Lydia Blaze?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She took the position that it was the Russian monarchists, after all these years, still trying to overturn the government in Moscow.
But you see, you
and put a monarchy back.
There was the
CIA and the Tolstoy Foundation, Russians in Dallas, that whole thing.
No, but you can't separate the monarchists from Italy, London,
exactly.
Paris.
I agree.
I'm
just saying that different researchers put a slightly different focus on it.
No, the monarchists want to get back on the throne, but the fascist element will let them have the throne if they control the world resources. So you can have a Queen Elizabeth and Prince Philip on the throne, and Julian
the dope money. Some of them maybe don't understand, but there was a lot of white Russian involvement in Dallas with Lee Harvey Oswald, and certainly Georgie Morenshield.
That was the first one in the country to point that out, first one in the world.
Right.
Okay, but part of the problem here is you're making a number of statements.
You ask the question, who are they? In a few words, the ruling class, this is the way they rule, through murder, through assassination, and so far they're continuing with their thing.
Yeah, but if there's one corporation, it would be the British American Canadian Corporation that was set up directly after the war, and they rolled ahead. Within 2 days of when the war was over, they had hundreds of organizations ready to come together. They merged and set up all the head businesses that were working together in controlling the world. The banks, the textiles, the industries, everything we need, the food production and everything,
right.
You were set up from 1943 to 45 so that when the war was over, they had their first meeting, and that was a craft, it's called the British American Commerce Corporation. And all of these people linked to what's happening.
What's funny is, speeches that I've given in the past, some naive little kid would get up, 20 years old, doesn't read anything about what I do or May does or any of this other. Well, how do we counter these people?
Yeah.
How can they be countered, May?
Well, then you counter them by education.
Yeah.
The only thing that people can't stand who are doing illegal activities and having coups and murders and political assassinations, and those that don't even look political but are, like Samantha Smith, you counter it by putting the most light on the subject, that it never stops until the truth comes, whether it's the Lindbergh baby, whether it's the Marilyn Monroe murder that's on the news today. Those things will never stop boiling. They're like geysers at Yellowstone. they will bubble until the truth comes out.
Can we say in the final analysis and all agree that it's no doubt, though, that we're talking about a dictatorship by a cabal of aristocratic families here, and people like the World Commerce Corporation are just sort of like consultants to these people? Donovan and Stevenson.
When you say people like the World British American Canadian Commerce Corporation, you're talking about 900 of the stock market's top people. You're not talking about a few people. You're talking about the top corporations of the world that run the stock market throughout the world, from Wall Street to London to Hong Kong and all over the world. The entire economy of the world.
What May pointed out in the previous taping was the Western Goals, which is in the broad perspective, it's a sort of another Bilderberg society. It's another trilateral commission.
It's not another. It's the finger of a body.
Yeah.
Like an octopus. There are eight parts that stretch out, and each one serves the central stomach.
Right.
And that's what we're talking about. There is a stomach, and it's making, that every 3 days as many people die of starvation as die from the Hiroshima bomb. That's what they're doing to the world's stomach. And we have the means, we're destroying our surpluses in one place and starving an atomic bomb every 3 days of people.
I mean, wouldn't that be a great thing if some of the records and things that I and May and other researchers work on, John Judge, we're not the only researchers on this, if these things could get onto the television, onto the video, from which we are generally suppressed, where you could see it in pictures, and because, you see, that is the problem we deal with, since we come on so infrequently.
Well, I come on once a week for an hour a week, so I'm not infrequent.
Or in my case, I run a recorded message on a great battery of phones in Chicago. But what I'm saying is, we still reach only a small segment.
Yeah, but
you can imagine what would happen if this could be seen on a one-hour video cassette.
No, let me tell you something. The awareness of the world is not done on one-hour videos. No one would believe it. It has to be done like drops of water on sand.
Yeah, you're right.
It comes, it seeps. When Khomeini wanted to overthrow the Shah of Iran, he sat in Paris and made cassettes, little cassettes like I get out every week. And they went into the mosque where the middle class heard them. And the Shah had all the might of America. He had all the money from the narcotics of Southeast Asia and Turkey combined. He had a police force second to none in the world, the Shabak. He had a country that was ruled by fear. He controlled the food there. He controlled the radio and the mines. How is it that the Shah was removed by tape cassettes in the mosque by Mr. Khomeini, not getting on national broadcasting and talking about the Shah, but sitting in Paris and quietly telling the world what the Shah was? That's the way people change. I don't.
I hope you're right, May. I'm not always that optimistic in view of the. I mean, here you had an opportunity to run this new political and espionage magazine, Rebel.
Yeah.
It was taken away from.
Nothing was taken away from me because that was a fluke. Larry Flint did it. I had the opportunity to survive and not be drugged like him. So I therefore continued. He went under with his aspirations.
You're right. But what I'm saying is there was an opportunity there, and because he was weak, it got away.
He had in his home and in his publication offices the CIA, the Defense Department, national security agents. He had Nazis. He had Klans brought into Atlanta, Georgia. He ran with the Klan and Nazis. He ate with the people that shot him. He had no ability to discriminate. He only throws names.
No, it's his conflicting interest did in him, his magazine, the whole situation.
Yeah, but he also, if you're going to be political, you have to be serious. He destroyed himself because he took it as a joke.
I guess what I'd like to ask, and seeing as we have both of you here today, are a couple of things. Things just by listening the avalanche of work that you've put out, and it makes me wonder of a couple of things. And essentially, it gets back to what Sherman said about the 20-year-old kid saying it and say, where do we go from here? Where do we go from here? I mean, if what you're saying is true. Yeah, I mean, for instance, there are elections every year in your country. Who do you vote for?
Maybe people should subscribe to my tapes once a week. physicians and publishers?
Well, I agree they should listen and be educated by her tapes, but I, for one, led a campaign in Illinois for the equal vote, so I at one time was called Mr. One Man, One Vote, and I think it's profound when I say I do not vote anymore, because this situation that we're talking about cannot be corrected by pulling a lever or marking a ballot. That's my opinion. Not everybody agrees.
Okay, Sherman, let me just tell you something. No matter how hard we fund the Congress, they did get the Somoza family out of Nicaragua. No matter how much we funded the Iranians, they got the Shah out. Right now in Argentina, there is a proposal to put the past three presidents in jail for life for over 1,000, but it's up to 30,000 murders. In Peru, there has come a democracy, and the J.P.'s races don't run it. In Bolivia, they have a democracy. Mr. Banzer, the cocaine king, was not put in, and Klaus Barbie's in jail, and all of Reagan's narcotic friends are running around for money. In Brazil, you have, for the first time in 26 years, a democracy. Don't tell me voting doesn't change. The minute Argentine changed government...
Well. Maybe I'm not as optimistic as you.
Well, I'm not optimistic. I'm telling you a fact. The minute Argentine changed government, the death squad stopped. The minute Khomeini was in, the Savak stopped cutting off arms and legs. This isn't a philosophy. This is a fact. Death squad stopped.
I hope that's true for North America.
When Dobasan was out of El Salvador, there are atrocities.
I mean, May, we've got a man in the White House.
I'm talking about
the death of President Kennedy.
I don't.
And how many people know about that?
I don't care. Voting counts. Voting absolutely counts. I can cite the Greeks got out the military dictatorship that America put in. Mr. Papandreou is the most liberal man probably running any country.
You have a number of optimistic points that I disagree with.
I'm making the point of what's happened, Sherman. I'm not sitting back and twiddling my sad eyes about how bad the world is. The world changes when people get out and vote.
Well, so I guess that's probably an interesting point to
well,
attend that
case,
element of the discussion.
Well, in any case, we're not discouraged, and we continue trying to educate people. She's got a point there.
If you have another half hour, I'll go into other countries. Why voting matters?
The point is, her point is that you can wear them down by incessant education.
No, my point is that people do change. People change. For example, when these farmers, 280,000 farms closed in 3 years, they all voted for Reagan. Tell me in the next election who they're going to vote for, unless they're really digging their own grave. And the point is, if you say voting doesn't count and the world is bad, I say it matters. And change your government like they got rid of the only thing that matters here is that they recognize that they had a dictatorship. And the American people are just beginning to see that we have been taken, that our banks are collapsing, our farms are collapsing.
Let me summarize this way. Are you saying that we either have a dictatorship or about to have one?
What I say is that we are under the yokes of a coup d'etat that took place in Dallas in 1963. And when people know that, when they know that, someday, we will put people like Gerald Ford and Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan in prison, like the people in Argentina, because they did have death squads here, and they've killed about 30,000 people.
I
agree with that, although to those that haven't seen fit to educate them on this. This comes as a great shock.
Don't be making apologies for those people. All they have to do is to go to a library or bookstore and see all the murders that are written about.
I guess the next question, we sort of exhausted that channel of talk. What I'd like to know is what you're working on. Maybe each of you could briefly, in a couple of seconds, just sort of talk about things that we can expect from your organizations in the coming months.
Well, what I'm working on are the Marilyn Monroe-type connections of the Reagan White House and the death of Vicky Morgan and what the Secret Service is doing to, in other words, some of us feel that the CIA and the Secret Service wiped out Marilyn Monroe to help the Kennedy White House. I likewise believe that the Secret Service wiped out Vicky Morgan, who was a mistress to Alfred Bloomingdale, one of Reagan's kitchen cabinet, and that all interests me. And it also interests the Secret Service because earlier this year when I said it on my recorded message, they camped on my doorstep. So I guess I struck home, and that's one of the things that I'm working on. What are you working on?
Well, I'm working on the fact that Joseph Mengele is not dead, and the people that work with him are Mr. Manfred Roeder and Karl Heinz Hoffmann in Germany are in jail. They are the narcotic dealers with Joseph Mengele, and the relationship of Simon Wiesenthal to the Gestapo and the Helmut Kohl and the Waffen-SS through his career on why he says Mengele is dead and Martin Bormann is dead, the illusion, the magic trick that we have people that help the Jews by finding Nazis is ridiculous. Our investigators are part of the problem, like some of the Kennedy researchers who have backboned to the CIA and OSS. I'm working on the Mengele Wiesenthal lies and how the network of the Odessa every day on my broadcast every week I'm making more connections of that Nazi Odessa organization set up at the before the end of the war to the White House now and to the people that killed John Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King. Every day the pieces get tighter and tighter, the people in jail and the trials going on simultaneously. You see, when Larry McDonald went down, at the time he went down, he was directly involved in the major investigations in this country that were being exposed, such as the Banco in Bozziona, the Vatican Bank, the Guggenheim Bank with the missing money. There were 10 major investigations going on at the time. Lucio Gelli, who walked out of the jail just the week he went was killed Larry McDonald. The Klaus Barbie, who was sent to Paris for trials in 2 years in 83 when Larry McDonald.
So what you're saying, May, to summarize it, is we are ruled by criminals.
Well, yes, you can summarize that, but what I'm working on is the interconnection of them from, say, 1943, the end of the war, until where they are in jail today because their trials are revealing their connections both to the Odessa and to Narcotics and Murder Incorporated.
Okay. Well, we're just about out of time here. I'd like to thank both of you for participating in these two shows. It's been quite enlightening to us up here north of the 49.
I hope the listeners had fun listening.
Anyway, for May Bressel and Sherman Skolnick, for Tom Rich and Bob Marshall, my name is Adam Vaughn. Thanks for tuning in to the International Connection this Saturday. Be sure to tune in again next Saturday.
Are you there?
Fantastic.
Great. Thanks very much.
That was a lot of fun, mate.
Okay. It always necessarily, you know, seems to go in different directions because one thing leads to the other, you know?
Yeah, well.
That's the nature of the work. It's not a single...